Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we're going to be talking about a band that is big, huge, but maybe not so much here in America, huge somewhere else. And this is a band that the fans of this band are so passionate about loving this band that just the name, just bringing up the name of who we're talking about in our Discord chat or other places, unleashed a flurry of tweets and responses and things about how excited people are for this episode. And that band, my friends, if you haven't figured it out yet, you Canadians out there, that band is the Tragically Hip.
Yes, they are hip and they are tragic.
There's tragedy. Yeah, well, there's tragedy. Yeah. Last year, lead singer Gord Downie.
Spoiler alert.
I know. I ripped the Band-Aid off quick, didn't I? Like, I didn't even give you a warning that I didn't even know I was going to talk about that so quickly in the
episode.
All right,
episode. By the way, they released some albums and he died. All right, thanks everybody. Good night.
I would actually say that it was that, hearing about that and kind of learning about the Tragically Hip that prompted us to do this episode, because being Americans, you and I had never really talked or, you know, heard a lot about the Tragically Hip. I would argue there's a couple songs that did make their way onto local alternative radio that I was familiar with, but more... You know, the other 99% of their music completely missed America. And I think that's something that that Canadians almost take pride in, you know, that it is something that is inherently Canadian. The Tragically Hip is something that is so Canadian that it doesn't exist outside the boundaries of the Great White North.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I wonder if Canadians think that Rush sold out because they're worldwide.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they feel... I think there's still some definite pride in Rush that Canadians have. But I feel like this is that one thing. It's like saying... I tried figuring this out. I tried talking on Twitter and saying, all right, finish this analogy. The Tragically Hip are to Canada as blank is to America. And the results of that were all over the place. A good portion of the people, I'm not going to say 90%, but a good portion of the people said, Bruce Springsteen is probably the thing that comes closest. Because
wow.
Bruce Springsteen is, you know, he's American. He is as American as apple pie.
He's born in the USA.
I was going to bring up the fact that song, on the surface, people think that that's this big, jingoistic, patriotic song, but it's actually kind of not. It's kind of the opposite. Yeah. But however, that said, I mean, he is an American treasure. We love Bruce Springsteen here in the States, and he's almost universally loved by Americans, but he reaches outside. Like, people like Bruce Springsteen outside of America.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Tragically Hip, the love, and it's a lot of love by Canadians, feels like it's very localized to Canada.
Well, even in the research, Justin's a big fan, you know, Trudeau.
Oh, okay.
We call him Justin here because we're friends.
Just call him Justin. Yeah. Good old handsome Justin.
Yeah.
I mean, Justin Trudeau's a big fan. A lot of people on Twitter, you know, besides Bruce Springsteen, I got some people who said there is no equivalent. There's no American equivalent to the Tragically Hip. There's nothing, unless you combine Mom, Apple Pie, and Baseball into one thing and cover it with Bruce Springsteen music. There's no thing that compares.
Okay, so wait, I have a thought. Okay, who's the guy who sang Put Me in Coach?
John Fogerty.
Yes, he might, not Center CCR, field. But he
But
himself.
Just John Fogerty,
yes.
Solo? Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah.
Or yeah, I mean, Don McLean?
Also, Tom Petty came up a lot. Bob Dylan a little bit came up. I'm trying to think who else came up as kind of a response to that. Somebody said Pearl Jam even. And then another person said the Rolling Stones. And then they said, oh, wait, they're not American. Strike that from the record. But I mean, that just goes to show you how much pride Canadians have in the Tragically Hip. And it's justified. Now, I don't know about saying full disclosure. I mean, you know, people know that we listen to the entire catalog in the space of 1 week. For me, it was actually in the space of like about 6 days, like 5 days. listened to every album. And I even watched a documentary called The Tragically Hip and Bob Cajun. And I'll talk about that when we get to, I think we talk about that in our notes when we get to that video, that movie.
You know, if they got older, they could be called the Broken Hip.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. The busted hip, the replacement hip.
The replacement hips. That's the tour with the replacements and the Tragically Hip.
Oh, it'd be fantastic. Fantastic. See, now we're talking. All right. Well, let's get to it and we'll talk about our impressions as we go through this thing. Often, by the way, the band is referred to as The Hip, and you'll hear me say that a lot just because it's a lot faster to say that than the Tragically Hip. They're a Canadian rock band. If you have not figured that out, then you need to listen to the first 8 minutes of the show. Canadian rock band from Kingston, Ontario. The current lineup is Paul Langlois on drums, Rob Baker on guitars, Gord Sinclair on bass, and Johnny Fay on drums. They've released 14 albums, 2 live albums, 1 EP, and 54 singles. They were formed in 1984 by Gord Sinclair and Rob Baker while they were in college. Later that year, Gord Downie and Fay joined them, and they started playing gigs together. And Gord Downie, of course, is the lead vocalist, who sadly passed away last year from a brain cancer, I believe. We'll get to that too when the time comes. They were joined by Langlois in 1986, and the name was taken from a skit in the Michael Nesmith movie called Elephant Parts. Now, have you seen any of Elephant Parts?
No. Well, I've seen Elephant Parts like at the zoo, but not the movie.
Okay. Yes. So Michael Nesmith, one of the four members of the Monkees, he was the one who was always wearing the knit cap on the TV show. He was always the more eclectic art rocky of the Monkees. He was the more out there. He released a video this almost performance art kind of thing called Elephant Parts. It had a music video that I encourage people to go check out. This is kind of a long tangent, but it's really cool. There's a music video that he released as part of this called Cruisin' was the name of the song. Hoping to promote a dream somewhere along the way. You're rolling through the streets, looking for a disco, passing up the treats from a kid named Cisco, trying to make connections with the... And it tells about the story of Lucy and Ramona and their brother Sunset Sam. And it's a really... It's a fun video. It's worth finding on YouTube. And I don't know. When I hear about Elephant Parts, this is the first thing that comes to my mind is this song, which doesn't feel at all like the rest of Elephant Parts. We watched the whole thing, and it was some weird, whacked out, like Kentucky Fried Movie kind of comedy stuff with this music video thrown right in the middle and another music video for Flying to Rio, if I remember correctly. But go look that up. Michael Nesmith, Cruisin'. And watch that after you're done listening to this episode of Soundography. It's great. Anyway, so there was a skit in there where the line Tragically Hip was taken. I think it was like a band lineup or something.
They were after the elephant sat on somebody, they were tragically hip.
No elephants make an appearance in Elephant Parts, by the way. To my knowledge, to my memory. I watched this thing back in 1986 or 87, so that tells you how long ago it was. The Hip was signed to a multi-record long-term deal with MCA Records, and in 1987, they released the Tragically Hip EP. They produced 2 singles, Small Town Bring Down and Highway Girl.
So before we get too much further, there was a sax player in the mix, David Manning, and he was only there for like 2 years. He was there from like 84 to 86. So I didn't spend a lot of time putting him into the main rundown because he's a blip in the hip radar.
Blip? A hip blip. Good to know. Okay, cool. In 1989, they had their first follow-up, their debut full-length album, Up to Here, produced 4 singles, Blow It High Dough, New Orleans is Sinking, Boot or Hearts, and 38 Years Old. And all 4 songs found extensive play on modern rock radio stations in Canada.
I'm just wondering, I mean, so we've talked about how they're exclusively or primarily, predominantly, inherently, they're Canadian. What is the wall that has kept them from crossing south?
I was thinking about that because I feel like another band that I was thinking about a lot. So there were a couple bands that I was thinking about while I was listening to these first albums. They reminded me a lot of Midnight Oil, surprisingly, an Australian, a very inherently Australian band, one that did find success outside of Australia. The Refreshments in their arrangements, their guitar work. And you may know them from a song called Bandidos.
Mm-hmm.
I got the pistols, so I get the pesos. Mm-hmm. It's the one that mentions Jean-Luc Picard. It's a great song. And also they did the theme to King of the Hill. And then, but the Refreshments with Ed Kowalczyk, who's the lead singer of the band live, there's a lot of parallels that I could draw between Ed Kowalczyk's vocals and Gord Downie's vocals in there. The way that they deliver a verse and are very selective about where the vibrato comes in, even to the point where there's knowing music, you probably be able to explain or give me the word I'm looking for, and I think it's diacritic or diachromatic, where you've got the scale that the song is in, mm-hmm. like, all right, this song is in B major or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Gord Downie's vocals will isolate three or four very specific notes out of that chord.
Mm-hmm.
And his verses will kind of end with a vibrato on that chord.
Yeah.
And kind of dig it in, dig that word in, like punch it, you know, like here's an important end of the verse. Bam. I'm going to hit that note and hit you with a vibrato and boom, you're hearing it.
It's actually one of the key parts of melody writing is where you will pull. So you have chord structure underneath to create the bass. Mm-hmm. And then what they do to create melody is they will pull out notes from those chords to kind of connect them in the melody.
Sure.
And sometimes they'll take the middle, the root. Sometimes they'll take the middle. Sometimes they'll take the, you know, wherever they feel like the interest can come. That way they're still relying on that chord, but they're highlighting the, you know, the root, or they're highlighting the middle notes, or what, however you want to phrase it, so that they can create the interest and melody. And so the guy from Live, he doesn't just build on top of it. He's using the triad to build his melodies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Instead of kind of saying, okay, so we could extend this chord up, you know, three or four notes and augment it,
this
or
direction,
diminish
go that direction with it. And I think Gord Downie says, no, I'm focusing on, you know, like it's like reading poetry and having those words that are the most colorful and the most important to the poem mm-hmm. be in bold italic.
Yeah. And it's funny when you mentioned Live, I hadn't really thought of it as a place of familiarity, but as soon as you said it, I couldn't mm-hmm. shake it, because they sounded like Tool by way of Seattle grunge.
Yeah, okay.
Which mm-hmm. kind of is the same thing as Live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of.
And it was weird how I couldn't put a finger on it until you said Live, and all of a sudden I'm like, "Hey, he's dead right. That's what this sounds like." Because I kept waiting for him to yell things like, "You little..."
But and the pre ILone Live, the Pain Lies on the Riverside mm-hmm. era of Live, for sure.
I think I think season 5, we could do a Live episode.
Oh, let's put that in the list for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
One more I want to put in there is Badfinger, but that's neither here nor there. That just reminded me, I was thinking of something else, and it reminded me, I meant to say, let's add Badfinger to our list. All right, anyway, the album that Up to Here was followed up in 1991 by an album called Road Apples. From that album, they released 3 singles, Little Bones, Twist My Arm, and 3 Pistols.
All I can hear is Sherman T. Potter yelling, "Road Apples.
Road Apples."
At Frank Burns.
Major Burns, get your butt in here and
Watch out for them road apples.
Yeah, I think it is a term. I think road apples is a term, a euphemism term for horse poop
that you find on the road. Yeah, that's why I couldn't shake the feeling.
I'm not telling you something you don't know, apparently. I'm not this album, by the way, Road Apples, reached number one on the Canadian charts. And during the Road Apples tour, Downey became recognized for ranting and telling fictional stories during songs such as Highway Girl and New Orleans is Sinking. The first two albums had a blues-influenced sound. They didn't gain significant international fame, but their overwhelming success in Canada gave them the freedom to explore their music more. And totally, you know, watching the concert film, the Bob Cajun concert film, I would have loved to have seen Tragically Hip Live. Gord Downie on stage is a tremendously entertaining, like, there is no just kind of sitting around in front of the microphone. I think the best example of that was somebody who saw the Cars live back in the heyday in the 70s or 80s, actually, when the first album came out, and said that, love the music, but man, you could have just put a photo of the Cars, a big life-size photo of the Cars up on stage, and people wouldn't have been able to tell the difference, except for Greg Hawks.
Just a bunch of fat heads on stage.
Right, exactly. A bunch of stickers.
Yeah.
Here's the Rick Ocasek sticker. Here's the Benjamin Norris sticker, et cetera. So
In 1994 or 5, I saw Blues Traveler at Red Rocks, and they had Widespread Panic open for them. And I like Widespread Panic. But Widespread Panic plays all their instruments looking at their shoes.
And kind of
swaying carefully in the breeze. And I was really, it kind of changed my opinion of them because there was no kind of entertainment or dynamic as far as the live setting. Because I could stare at my shoes and listen to them on an iPod. Yeah. So what was the point?
That's interesting because... It's funny, I've never really thought of that. We saw, also at Red Rocks, saw Sting, and then saw this brand new band open up for him called Dada, and easily a lot of people remember Dada from the 90s, big song called Disneyland. I just crashed my car again, now I'm going to Disneyland. And I was so impressed with the band and got so hooked on their music from seeing them in concert and seeing the performance they put on, not just hearing the music, but actually like seeing them perform, that I walked out of Red Rocks with a Dada t-shirt and I did not buy a Sting t-shirt. Like that's how much of an influence is like, all right, I've got money for a t-shirt. Sorry, Sting. I'm buying a Dada. I'm buying the opening act t-shirt.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I was in 86. I went to see Dokken and Judas Priest on tour, and I bought the Dokken shirt because I didn't care about Judas Priest. Bring on the emails, bro. Come at me.
No, it makes sense. And the same thing again happened with me with watching the Bob Cajun concert film. Gave me a very new appreciation of the Hip, especially when you hear the people that they're interviewing and they're talking about, oh, this band has just, you know, meant so much to me over the years. And, you know, they've always been there for me. Their music has always been there. And I've, you know, loved listening to them when I go to Tim Hortons and having my Timbits there. I'm making that other part up. But hearing fans talk about the Hip makes you love the Hip more. So I'd encourage anybody, a passing fan of the Tragically Hip, or somebody who's never heard of them, who's listening to us and listening to clips on this show and saying, all right, yeah, they're kind of cool. Go watch a concert film and see Gord Downie perform and see the band and hear people talk about the Hip, and you will realize that, all right, it's way bigger than these five guys on stage. Mm-hmm. It's a bigger thing than the sum of the parts.
It's weird for a band like this to become a national touchstone, but I kind of feel like they are.
Yeah, they are totally. All right. lavishing all this praise. The next album, 1992, they released Fully Completely, which produced six singles, including Locked in the Trunk of a Car and Courage. And the album had less of a blues sound to it. Follow the unknown with something Courage, by the way, when I heard that, I instantly recognized it. And I didn't know why I recognized it. And I think that it did get some radio play here in the U.S., I'm pretty sure. I think there's more to it than that, though. I think it's also that there have been, in my library, there are more covers of Courage than any other Tragically Hip song. And that's what made me recognize it.
Did you do
it. I've never done a cover story on Tragically
Hip. I was going to say, after his passing, I thought maybe
no. Yeah. No, only because I don't have enough material to make a cover story. Now, maybe I will. After hearing all their music, and I know that they, you know, that there's a lot more people who cover their music in Canada than I have here, but I'll do some tracking down and see what I can find. But, yeah, Courage covered a lot. A couple other songs were covered, and I'll tell you about one of them in my playlist, as a matter of fact. During the subsequent tour for Fully Completely, they tested out many songs that would later appear on Day for Night, 1984's Day for, or 94's Day for Night. Also produced six singles. Two of them were Nautical Disaster and Grace 2. Many called this album their most artfully realized creation. I did like this. And for me, this is actually when they started moving more into kind of REM territory. And it was surprising when I asked about that comparison to American bands. Nobody brought up REM. That's one that I thought I would... thought I would see, because there's that Athens, Georgia love. But again, maybe REM is too, they got a little too highfalutin.
I think the difference between some of the bands that we've mentioned trying to compare with American bands and Canadian bands is the American bands get too big for their britches pretty quick.
Yeah. Michael Stipe, Gord Downie seems like somebody you would have absolutely loved to sit down and have a Molson with, right? Just sit down, have a beer with, and chat. Michael Stipe, maybe in those even in those early days, he didn't feel accessible. And now he, I don't know, it feels like he'd be asking you why you're wearing leather shoes or why.
Why do you want to talk to me? Because
right, exactly.
Yeah.
So REM, I'm seeing why REM was not a good comparison. Well, thank you for that. The next album, 1996's Trouble at the Hen House, produced five singles, including Ahead by a Century and Butts Wigglin', which appeared in the soundtrack to the Kids in the Hall film Brain Candy. Coming down.
Did you see that?
I have not seen that. I'm surprised I haven't seen that, because I love Kids in the Hall.
I feel like that's something you guys could sack pretty easily.
I'll bet we could.
I don't do comedies very often, but I think that's a comedy you could sack.
And Strange Brew, you know, we did Strange Brew, which is like the SCTV Bob and Doug McKenzie thing, also very Canadian. Feel like Brain Candy would be a good comparison to that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
This is actually where I started liking them a lot more. Mm-hmm. Trouble in the Hen House is one of my favorites. There's one more later on that I really liked, but Trouble in the Hen House actually had some of the songs that were on like the short list to make my list, and I think one or two of them did. So Trouble in the Hen House is one where I was like, yeah, okay, I'm getting it.
That was a turnaround thing. Mm-hmm. I did notice around this time too that that's where I heard the Gord Downie range, the song range,
vocal.
Because I don't want to make it sound like he's got limited range. He definitely doesn't. But I want the chord thing that he does that I was really liking. They released a live album called Live Between Us, or maybe Live Between Us, but I think Live Between Us makes more sense. It was recorded in Detroit in July 1996.
That's as far south as they ever went.
Detroit. Yeah, no kidding. Just buried you over the border, eh? In July 1996, the Hip headlined Edenfest. The three-day concert took place at Mossport Park in Bowmanville, which is in Ontario, Canada, just a few months after the LP Trouble at the Hen House was released. The concert sold over 70,000 tickets total and was attended by an estimated 20,000 additional people who gained access to the concert site after the outside security broke down. So they bum-rushed the venue and actually got in.
But it was a very polite bum rush.
Right. Sorry. We're coming in, eh? Sorry, didn't mean to bump you. God, people are, if we have Canadian, I'm going to apologize right now to Canadian listeners who.
Both of them, Mike O'Day and some other person.
Oh, I know. There's so many more. And I'm just like doing this voice like I'm Rick Moranis and Bob and Doug. And sorry, it's the only Canadian I know. It's the only Canadian I can speak.
The only Canadian word I know is when you talk about going to university, which is Canadian for college.
Right, or I'm going to hospital, yeah. Which is Canadian for the hospital. The band started developing a unique sound at this point, and then Downey's vocal style changed. They experimented with song structure and chord progressions, and the songs explored themes of Canadian history, and they sang about water and land.
And mountains and beer, yeah. And bears and the moose. And the
100th parallel and all that. Yeah. In 1998, they released the album Phantom Power. 5 singles came off of this album. And this was 1999's Juno Award for Best Rock Album, Best Album Design, and the single Bob Cajun was the Juno Single of the Year in 2000.
Yeah, they won a lot of those Junos. I'll cover that a little bit later. They are a very accolade-laden band, mm-hmm. So we'll cover that in a little bit.
In 2000, they released the album Music at Work, which featured Julie Dwaron on a couple, number of the tracks, and reached number one on the Canadian charts.
And this is the other one that's fighting for top spot as far as album favorite of mine.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Cool. I think Inviolate Light was my pick, my favorite album, which is funny because I picked two songs from Fully Completely in my playlist. We'll get to that in a little bit, but I think if we're talking about favorites, I think In Violent Light was like a multi-listen for me. That song, or that album, by the way, was the next one up, 2002. It was recorded in the Bahamas, and it was certified platinum in Canada and had 3 singles released from it. The band made a cameo in the movie Men with Brooms, playing a curling team, of course, Men with Brooms. Two of their songs, Poets and It's a Good Life If You Don't Weaken, were featured on the soundtrack.
I need to see this film. It's the Winter Olympics.
It's right around the right time for all this. Yeah.
I really feel like I need to find this movie and watch it because I need to see. I hope it. I know it's not, but I would love it if it was done like Best in Show or
yes,
Waiting for
Ghost. I was just
going
to say that. Right. The whole mockumentary. I'll bet it is.
I hope it is.
That'd be great. Yeah. They recorded themselves. They recorded a cover of Black Day in July for a Gordon Lightfoot tribute album.
So there's a song they did that you need to pull out. The cover story.
And the children locked inside. Black day in July. Black day in July. The soul of Motor City is bearing across the land. It's the book of law and order. It's taken
out. Someday. I know it's a different song, but it's Gordon Lightfoot. In 2004, they released the album In Between Evolution. This one reached number one and has sold over 100,000 copies. In 2005, radio stations stopped playing New Orleans is Sinking out of respect for the city that was suffering from the tragedy of Hurricane Katrina. November of 2005, they released a box set called Hipponymous. I think that's what it's called, Hipponymous.
It makes sense.
It included all of their singles and videos and a backstage documentary called Macroscopic, as well as an animated short and 2 brand new songs. Also included a full live show as well.
That's a heck of a box set.
That is, right? I love the name, Hipponymous. Your Favorites was also released. It's a collection of hits as selected by 150,000 online fans was released as well. I think this is the way to do a greatest hits album, is leave it to your fans to pick them.
Iron Maiden did it for the Ed Hunter album that had the video game on it. Mm-hmm. They also had fan-selected tracks for their greatest hits for it.
And I feel like Thomas Kalnacki would do something like this too.
Uh-huh. And who was the... we covered them.
And Weezer, I think.
Weezer like would do something like that too. And I keep... It's funny, in the internet era where we get Bodie McBoatface, we can still get real answers from people.
Right. Yes. I think that's the thing. the Boaty McBoatface wasn't just asked of fans of boats. It was asked of the entire internet. Whereas if you ask fans of a band to pick their greatest hits, you're going to get a much truer response than Boaty McBoatface.
It's kind of, you get the chat room you deserve. And I kind of feel like in these things, you get the voters you deserve.
For sure. 2006, they released the album World Container. This was produced by Bob Rock, who also produced the Black Album for Metallica and much more. Again, reached number one on the Canadian charts. They toured opening for The Who for the Canadian leg of their tour. In 2009, We Are the Same came out. They released three singles from that album. And then my favorite of the album covers, 2012's Now for Plan A. Actually, I really like this album too, musically. But it's that Twister game gone awry. I just love it. It says so much on the cover there. That album had the singles At Transformation and Streets Ahead as singles. And then in 2015, lead singer Gord Downie, as we mentioned, was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. Just crushing. I remember the reaction online from fans, even, you know, not knowing about the Tragically Hip. I started to get emails from people saying, oh my God, Brian, you gotta do a tribute show for the Hip. We just found out that the lead singer has got terminal brain cancer. I'm like, oh my God, I need to find out more about the band. And that was kind of the start of all this. In 2016, they released the album Man Machine Poem. And they went on a tour of Canada. The final show of the concert was broadcast nationally as a cross-platform TV, radio, and internet special.
And this was not the first time they'd done that. This is I just wrote it on this one, but there are a number of times where their concerts were basically on every channel, on every source of every kind of digestible media you could get in Canada at one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. Like you said, I have a hard time coming up with any equivalent.
Actually, I kind of just thought of one. There's the band Nightwish. And I remember...
They're like Norwegian, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And they, when they did their final concert... Oh,
their Norwegian equivalent is what you're saying.
Yes, okay. There's a... their final concert they did with their original singer, Tara, whatever her name was, the kind of the operatic vocalist they had originally. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. When they did their End of an Era concert, the video they released was jam packed with people, and they're in tears as she's singing her final song. I mean, this is a group of people who were living and dying with this band. And I didn't realize what they were as far as a touchstone for a country until I saw that live concert. And they might kind of be in the same realm, but again, they've bled out to the rest of the world because before recording, I knew who Nightwish was. So, you know, it's hard because not only are they huge, but cracking the borders is a strange thing. Maybe if you lived in Alaska, you'd know them. But, I mean, south of Detroit, south of Detroit, it's a rarity to know who they
are. It's very rare. Yeah, I mean, like I said, Courage. I was familiar with Courage from alternative radio, and that's about it. No, but I had, you know, a taste of that watching that documentary and hearing fans talk about them. Crowded House, maybe, you know, in New Zealand and kind of in their adopted Australia.
Dream Theater in New York.
Might have that as well. Are you trying to get me to drink again, Hammond? Is that what you're trying to do? Anyway. And then in October 2017, last year, Gord Downie passed away. There was also an indication at this time that there's more material still out there, more Hip material that may still get released posthumously. And hopefully that's the case. But
so I couldn't find anywhere. Are they going to continue as a band with a new lead singer? Or are they like changing their name and keeping the band together? Or what do you know of the plans? I couldn't find anything.
I have no idea. I couldn't find any information on that. I feel... Just based on what I've seen and heard about the band from fans and stuff, I can't imagine that they would continue on without Gord. It felt like he was the heart and soul of that band, and not to put any sort of slight on the other members of the band, but it just seems like it would be blasphemous almost for them to get a replacement singer and continue on. Maybe after a while, maybe they do like a Queen kind of thing where it's a revolving door of musicians that are more paying tribute to the original vocalist than replacing them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's what Queen did.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get to the statistics in general and notes about the hip.
All right. So they have 9 of their albums. So they released 14, and 9 of them went number one on the Canadian charts.
Wow.
Which, that's a heck of a ratio. There are not many people in any other national chart or Billboard chart or anything that can kind of have that claim. Mm-hmm. And of those Juno Awards, they've won 16 of them.
Oh, wow. Really?
Okay. Yeah. They kind of own the Juno Awards. I'm actually going to go back and look at something.
It's like the Canadian Grammys, basically.
Yeah. I was actually going to go skip back to our Rush notes and see what, all the way back to episode 10. No Juno Awards.
None for Rush? Wow.
None Juno Awards, as far as I can see quickly.
Interesting. You know who, by the way, I was thinking about this, another band that kind of has some parallels with the way that they're loved, they're beloved. Also another Canadian band, the Bare Naked Ladies, kind of a more comedic version of the Tragically Hip, but equally as loved and celebrated.
And if they had $1 million, boy, the things they would do.
They'd be rich.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Well, let's get to our Stairway to Heaven song. So you go see the Tragically Hip you travel back in time, you see the Tragically Hip, and you don't leave. What is the song that you're hearing before you get up and walk out, knowing that the band is done, they're not coming back, and that's it?
I have no idea.
I know. The only this is a tougher one, because coming into this, only knowing a couple songs, I felt like I had to pick one of those songs, and Courage was the song I picked, because I feel like that is the one that crossed over into American radio.
Okay, my thought as I was listening was Grace 2. That's mostly because of the way the song is structured, and I'll talk about it. Spoiler alert, it's on my list. But it feels like something they could use very easily and play every night. Well, that's Hammond, just me.
You're going to be surprised and pleased. Grace 2 is number 3 on their list. Courage is number 5. Number 1 we've actually talked about as being kind of a controversial song, but New Orleans Is Sinking it was number 1.
I can't foresee a Dixie did she, so it danced the sidewalk clean. My memory is muddy, what's this river that I'm in? New Orleans is sinking, man, and I don't want to swim.
Oh, wow.
And even with all the controversy of not playing it on radio after the Hurricane Katrina stuff. Number 2, kind of rounding out the top 10, At the 100th Meridian, which I put on my list. Grace 2, Ahead by a Century, Courage, Poets, Fully Completely, Bob Cajun, Gift Shop, and Nautical Disaster.
Yeah, that's the record of the Edna Fitzgerald cover, right?
It is. That's right. Speaking of Gordon Lightfoot, right? I mean, it seems like if you're going to do a Gordon Lightfoot cover, maybe that's the one you guys should do or should have done. Anyway, and before we get to our playlists, we're going to do our covers.
Look at you actually doing it this week.
I did. I totally did. And this seemed like a light bulb went off in my head when I thought of this one. But hearing the Tragically Hip cover, How Soon Is Now by the Smiths, I think would be amazing, right? You take out that classic Smiths, that sound that they have in the song, and you just break it down with those acoustic natural instruments and Gord Downie's voice hitting I'm the sun and the air. And, you know, it's like perfect. It feels like it would be a great translation of that song.
I like that one. I picked, so there's a band called Little Charlie and the Nightcats, and they're a blues band, of course. They do a great song called Talking to My Next Ex-Wife, which I love. But I would like to hear them do a very, very bluesy New Orleans blues version of New Orleans Is Sinking. It's a very bluesy song already, and you really own the bluesiness of it. You could do a very cool Dirty South blues version of New Orleans Is Sinking with them.
It kind of be that appropriate thing, right? The cover where, you know, a band that is from the area that the song talks about is singing about it.
Yeah.
Almost like, you know, to bring up Bare Naked Ladies again, they had that song Brian Wilson, and then Brian Wilson covered that song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of cool, a cool bit of synergy there.
Yeah.
I can't believe I just used the word synergy. All right, now let's go ahead and get to our playlist.
It's all part of the paradigm shift.
That's right. We're going to do some very forward-facing outsourcing. And anyway. All right, let's do our playlist. This is where we pick some songs. Look, you know, it's a little tougher for us to shy away from greatest hits. So we might have picked a couple of greatest hits based on what we're seeing in the set lists. Some of these might be greatest hits. We don't know. We are discovering this band ourselves with you. And
unless you're Canadian, and then we're stupid.
Right, and we didn't look at your favorites, greatest hits collections, when we did this. Number one on my list, this was, so I really like the song Courage, and I felt like that one would be their greatest hits, since that was a huge one here in America. But I went with another one that I did recognize, and again, it's from that Inviolet Light album, and the song is called The Darkest One. And it's the one that kind of goes, come in, come in, come in, come in, at the beginning. Hearing it is like, oh God, I think I recognize this, but I don't know why I recognize it. And in any case, recognize it or not, I really like the lyrics and kind of how the chorus builds up. Mm-hmm. It starts out really, really low with that lower register. And then by the time you're in the chorus, he's kind of really just belting it out about being the darkest one. And then I finally figured it out. After I had added it to my list, the reason I recognized it is because I also have a cover of this song, and that one just happens to come up fairly regularly in Shuffle, and I know the cover way better than I know the original. So when I heard this original, that's why all of a sudden it just kind of like instantly clicked for me and kind of connected with me. Number two is Yawning, or it says Yawning or Spiraling, but it's not Yawning or Spiraling. It's Yawning or... Hold on a second. That's some weird autocorrect typo baloney. It's Yawning or Snarling.
One day in El Paso, the cops go into the crowd. Under a glaring bladder of light. And the music.
I don't know why. It corrected to yawning or spiraling. So yeah, the song is is Yawning or Snarling. And hearing this song, which is on Day for Night, I was so compelled by the lyrics I picked up that I had to go to the web and actually look up the rest of the lyrics. And it's got this kind of weird David Lynch Twin Peaks thing where they're looking at this photograph of this guy, you know, like I'm picturing FBI agents and police being called over to a scene, and all they have of the suspect is this weird photo, and they can't tell if he's yawning or snarling in the photo.
Or spiraling.
It's either yawning or spiraling. That's hilarious. The next one is El Dorado.
Man-sized El Dorado. Who to do? Who could blame him? Blame him, where we're going, what's the ticket? Just the mention of Berlin makes me sexy.
I just love it because it says whoop-de-doo. The song actually lyrics contain whoop-de-doo. That hooked me completely already. And then that was another one that I had to go look up the lyrics. I'm saying to myself, is he singing whoop-de-doo? Is he singing what I think he's singing? Yeah, that's exactly what he's singing. He's singing whoop-de-doo.
Oh, the bar for your lyrics content's pretty interestingly set.
It is. You're hearing what connects, makes me connect with a song. Number four on my list, At the 100th Meridian. At the 100th Meridian, which I really like.
Take my life in my hands. Where the great
planes begin at the 100th meridian, at the 100th meridian, where the great planes begin. Driving down a corduroy road, weeds.
From the album Fully Completely. Man, talk about the Canadian-ness of a song. This one's got it. It's got Canadian-ness. It might as well be covered with cheese curds and smothered with gravy. It's so Canadian. Love it. And to find out that it's a one of their big hits doesn't surprise me. And then finally, from Road Apples, Twist My Arm. This is like a good representation, I think, of the pre, you know, the first four or five albums, the EP, and the first three or four albums. This is one of those songs that I'd say is like Midnight Oil, smashed up with Live, smashed up with The Refreshments.
Blow me over, board our call, gathered in and swallowed whole. Yeah, do I want to, all that talk, do I want to twist my arm? Yeah, do I want to, all that.
And I dig it. It's a rocker, that Twist My Arm.
Alrighty.
How about you, Hammond? How about your list?
So, my first one, I picked Grace 2 from Day for Night. I love how the instruments layer in through the introduction. This is why I picked it, thinking it might be the greatest hit, is because it starts with one instrument, another instrument kicks in, and another instrument kicks in. It'd be great for like band introductions.
A good showcase, right?
Yeah. And
right,
so,
bringing in the members of the band, yeah.
And I love when songs do that because it gets you an opportunity to really hear what each person is playing before it turns into the amalgamation of what the song really is. So you get an idea of what each person is adding to the soup before you taste it.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Good analogy. Yeah.
So my second one is Put It Off from Trouble at the Hen House. This one is really, really moody, and I felt like it was my turn to pick a slow burn because you typically are the one who picks the slow burners. I felt like it was my turn to pick a slow burner, and this one.
Cool. I still picked one, but yeah. But I'm glad I'm having an effect on you.
Yeah,
I love
it. You were listening to June the other day voluntarily, so.
Mm-hmm. Right.
My next one is Tiger the Lion, and that's Music at Work. This one's really heavy. It feels like an early grunge era song. There are some moments, though, in the solo that sounded a lot like he was pulling, like I don't want to say direct inspiration, but a lot of inspiration from the end solo from Fade to Black by Metallica. But okay. It's a really heavy song. It's got like some really strong grunge elements to it. But there's some moments at the end of the solo that sound like these, like, oh yeah, this is a sound a little fadey to blacky to me.
Okay, cool.
Then I picked Gus the Polar Bear from In Between, and the reason I picked
I love the title, but yeah,
the reason I picked this, it's a song about a bear in the zoo with depression. I couldn't make that up if I tried. And
no, I know. It's one of those great topics that you hear for a song that you you hear about the topic before the song, you're like, all right, I'm instantly compelled and interested to listen to that song just based on what I know about that title.
Yep. Just like Butts Wiggling. I had to listen to that one. It almost made my list, but I'm like, no, nah, that's too, I already went for the cheap jokes with, the drive-by truckers. It was, I needed to be more sophisticated. So I went with Gus the Polar Bear. And then my last one is 700 Foot Ceiling. It's from also Trouble at the Hen House. And this is a very cool, it's one of the heavier songs in the catalog. I really enjoyed this one. Like I said, Hen House and Music at Work were two of my favorite albums in this listen. And when you binge listen like this, for to have two that stand out like that, kind of a rarity, because after a while, there's a lot of almost white noise that happens album after album after album. And sure. two of them kind of raised up to the surface and poked out at me to get my attention. It's kind of a big deal. So I do want to say that this was a surprising listen because there's just so much music I had no idea that they had done. And then to have two albums and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to buy this one. And another one, I'm going to, I want to buy this one. It's a thing that I'm happy that I sat through and did this.
Cool. Yeah, totally. I am too. This was a revelation. It definitely wasn't what I expected. I was really expecting something different. And it wasn't until about halfway through that I realized the hip is bigger than their music. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's like, it's, I'm not going to compare them to the Beatles in the sense that they're that worldwide, huge, massive, but I'm going to compare it to the Beatles as, the Beatles are more than just four dudes with Nehru jackets singing about "She Loves You." Yeah. 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 You
know, whoop-a-dee-doo.
Whoop-dee-doo. Exactly. Awesome. Very cool. That was a lot of fun. And man, I feel like I can't imagine what we could do to follow up an episode like that. Like what we almost couldn't even do like a band to follow up an episode like that. Hammond, would you agree?
Yeah, we need to do something bigger than a band. Bands are small time.
I think we need to do an entire year, and that's what we're doing. We're doing the year 1971. We do one of these year episodes every season, and we pick a year, well, sometimes randomly, sometimes not. We did the year that gave us Brian last year, or last season. Now we're doing the year that gave us Hammond, the year that Hammond Chamberlain was thrust upon us.
Whether you wanted it or not.
Like a lunch lady heaping a big ladle of chicken wings onto your metal tray. That's right. Hammond Chamberlain, 1971. And we're going to listen to the music that, that was probably playing in the hospital room when he was born.
I was born in Kassel, Germany. So I'm not sure.
Oh,
okay, what was what playing in those rooms? Yeah. It might've been Edelweiss or something.
They were listening to the music that plays when you do the cliffhanger game in on The Price is Right. That's what they were listening to. That just they have a radio station that's nothing but that. All right. Well, that is going to be coming up next week, so stick around for that. Until then, you can get a hold of us. We want you to get a hold of us. Do it by emailing us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and tweet us, tweet the heck out of us, using @thesoundography. That's the name we are there. Soundography.com is the website where you'll find everything. All seasons of our show will be right there. You can listen to the entire back catalog, find a band you like and or a band you don't know anything about, and listen to the show. Discover the band like we did. You can also check out the playlist. Our playlist notes are always, whenever they're available, are always there on the show notes for that episode. You'll also be able to find a link to buy the songs, and I think we're going to link to that Greatest Hits album for sure.
Yes.
So you can find out what the greatest hits are. You'll also find a link to support us on Patreon. We love getting your support. As a matter of fact, we appreciate you guys so much for your support. And we encourage you, if you find any interest and love in this show, and how could you not? Please throw us a buck or two a month, just a little bit, just to kind of keep the lights on here. Keep us recording this show. We've made this our jobs, people. And you're our bosses. and we need your paycheck. Let's just tell it to you like that. No, just kidding. You can also leave us reviews. Go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, go anywhere you want to leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show, or email us and let us know what you think of the show. We'd love to get your feedback. We read everything that you send us, and we reply back to 99% of what you send us. So be sure to do that. That's it. We will see you in 1971. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying that is going to do it for Soundography. We'll see you next week.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.